This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia on the Sports History Network in conjunction with Swick Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina, home of Gridiron Greats magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. You can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Large. He hails Portland, Oregon, the one, the only, Joe Squires. Joe,
welcome to the Nailed show. It today, Captain. Oh, my goodness. I can always tell when you've eaten your Wheaties.
That's right.
It just rolls.
Wheaties are the breakfast of champions.
The breakfast of champions. Remember. Absolutely.
Outstanding. Well, we have an open forum today. We're going to pick up on a few things that we talked about in the last two shows, which, by the way, were heavily watched and heavily recorded, listened to on our podcast, which was nice to see.
Must have been Carl. Carl brings them in.
We're going to talk a bit about some incredible items in the current REA auction, and we're going to make a few comments on the infamous, the overwhelming national sports collectors convention, which is currently going on, and currently Joe Squires and myself are relaxing at home,
watching from
avoiding the hysteria, avoiding the Pokemon,
avoiding the lines,
the $699 grading. We're avoiding it all. And just, it's almost like a holiday not being there, put it that way.
Yeah. You know what? We were talking pre-show, and it's like, I love the National, and I have so many good memories of the National. And hanging out with people. The most important part of the National is just hanging with people. And exactly. I have such good memories of it. But there's been a couple of people that have posted pictures of lines and this and that. And there's times where I'm like, you know what? I'm happy sitting at home.
I agree. I mean, I've probably been to 12 or 14 Nationals.
Oh, my.
And, you know, I've been behind the table. I've been in front of the table, so on and so forth. And I still remember probably the best times I had were in Baltimore, because your hotel was basically attached to the National.
Totally.
It was easy to set up in. We drove down from Connecticut. It wasn't a bad drive. I mean, it was a good, you know, day drive down, no big deal. Good food, great restaurants all around.
Great.
You know, we had our old dinner with our old group there.
LTS. Yep.
Yeah. And so long story short, I had really good memories from the two times in Baltimore. Went to see the Orioles play baseball game there. So it was a nice, it was a cool situation. The Baltimore Sports Museum was right there, and that was pretty cool to go through. So I had a lot of items there that were very, very, it just added to the experience. Cleveland was a rough time, but both times I was there. The only one good time, long time subscriber.
Dinner with MSB.
Yeah, long time subscriber to the magazine, Don Grease, whose grandfather was the treasurer of the Cleveland Browns. I got to view his collection, which was like a once in a lifetime opportunity. Exceptionally cool. And then the rest of the time, it's all been in Chicago. And with the exception of the two times in Atlantic City, which I could have taken, it was, Atlantic City is Atlantic City. That was,
I skipped those.
that those were rough setting up, and it was rough, dealing there. But anyways, and the rest of the time, Chicago. And Chicago's gotten so big now, it's just not a, it's not a pleasurable experience for me at my age to, get a hotel room now, 2, 3 miles away from
Oh, good.
the convention center. You're gonna have to walk. You can't use any kind of transportation because nothing is moving. Wait in line to get in, so on and so
Well,
forth.
the worst thing about the Cleveland National was the transportation. The hotel was a couple
That
miles away, so you could walk it or you could, Uber it or wait for a bus. But I mean, either way, it wasn't convenient. Like, if
yeah.
you hit 1 o'clock and you just wanted to go take a quick nap, well,
Unless
event.
whatever the hook was that attached, I think it was a Sheraton or whatever. That was the only way you were going to be able to do that.
But I like the Baltimore one, like you said. There's a lot of good
Yeah, it
memories
was
there.
great.
I
It
mean,
was
I,
great.
you know, yeah, we drank too much on many, many nights in Baltimore.
We had some fun dinners there, and it was a good show. It was a good crowd. It was a buying crowd. It was an interesting crowd. I thoroughly enjoyed those experiences. Next year it's going to be in Detroit, so several
I
people.
didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure next year is Detroit.
Oh,
So
interesting.
a couple of people have asked if I go, and I said I don't know. It all depends on what I got going on through the year.
Yeah, that's not bad. I've never been to Detroit.
John Spano and I next week, for anybody in the North or South Carolina area, Myrtle Beach area, we're going to be at the Myrtle Beach Convention Center in a mega show on Friday and Saturday. And if you're looking for information, I can send it to you. If anybody just wants it, I can tell you what's going on with that. So it'd be good to be behind the table with John again, and we're going to have some serious vintage stuff there. So it'll be interesting to see.
One of my favorite people in the hobby. And with both of you behind the booth, two of my top three favorite people in the
Everybody be there with their phones like this,
hobby.
taking the picture and so I'm coming up on as a comp. Is that how much it is?
Oh, I was just commenting on someone because it seems like everybody's like, there were so many videos of like just somebody coming up like, hey, I'm with, Shin Sports. It's like, I have, 42 followers and just, here I am on my cell phone, live streaming. Hey, can you ask me about, can you tell me about that card? And I'm like, that might be cool the first couple times. You're like, oh, okay. And then you look him up and you're like, that guy's got like five followers. I mean, what the hell? And
They're all trying to generate an audience, so on and so forth. I got in by a guy, yeah, it was last year, and he said, "Do you mind if I ask you a few questions?" So I said, "No." I said, "Who are you?" And he kind of explained it. He was that type of guy. He had a little channel. I said, "Fine." Then I gave him one of the magazines, and he kind of like got startled because he didn't realize, he had no clue who I was. I had no clue who.
Realize you were the publisher.
Well, not really, but I gave a good interview for him so he could try to help him type of thing. So I said, you got any questions, give me a call or here's my email. Hopefully you'll do well in the hobby type of thing. So here's what
Spreading the good word, Captain.
it's just ironic to me that people now will be willing to pay for the same day grading, which they didn't deliver on, $700, whatever ridiculous figure it was. Can't swing $35 for a subscription to Gridiron Greats magazine. I just got to laugh about the whole thing, because again, I think a segment of the hobby just doesn't want to study the hobby anymore. They They just want the information presented to them. Okay, this card is for sale for $100. I know I can flip it for 200, therefore I will buy it. Well, what's the history of the card? Is it a vintage card? What is it? So on and so forth. So, that part is still evident some parts of the hobby, but I think, the flipping part has taken priority to a large degree. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, the social media part of it too. Yep. It's
It is
here I
what.
am. Here I am being filmed flipping this. Yeah, anyways. Yeah. Anyways.
Let's go to REA or whatever.
Well,
We're gonna go first.
first I wanted to discuss hang on. I have a couple pictures loaded up. I wanted to discuss an item that closed.
Oh
It
yeah. Okay. Yep.
hang on a sec. Sometimes it takes a second. I accidentally opened up a couple things. An item that closed. We had Carl on last week, and he discussed this a little bit.
Oh
But at the same time, in Heritage, this auction was running. 1967 Royal Castle Miami Dolphin Collection, 36 of them with two Bob Greasy cards. And obviously the chase card, the most sought after, is the Bob Greasy card.
Right.
And this ended, screen over, this ended $40,000. The day prior, I think I mentioned this, it was hovering at $900. And I'm like, oh my, I've heard how rare these are. This might be a steal. I wonder if nobody must be watching.
And I think that they could have described it a lot better, and
Totally
they
agree.
could have, given a better listing of what you had there, because there are a lot of dolphin collectors that
Yeah.
with their right arm to even have a type card from that set, and because of it, I think it probably could have even gone higher than what it
Yeah.
did. Whoever had the pockets for it obviously knew what was there.
Totally agree.
Hopefully they're not going to just be worried about getting them graded, because that kind of spoils that card, in my opinion. It's a pretty unique standalone
Yeah.
card, which has a great history to it, and it's on literally on every want list I've ever seen over the years for a dolphin collector, and
Yep.
for a true master collector of 1948 to 88 football cards.
And I probably don't need to explain this. If you're listening to this show, you probably know what Royal Castle is, but it was a hamburger joint in Miami that put these around. It's, kind of like the GI Joe set. I wrote an article for Gridiron Great, the grid, 76 GI Joe set, for or Fred Meyer set, excuse me. I was thinking of where I met Steve Largent first time. The Fred Meyer set. Seahawks. This is just it's just a local rare issue. It's very cool. Very sought after. I mean, even this Seahawk fan knows about
The one
that.
thing I always enjoyed regional football sets, I always thought they were so unique. I always thought it was the coolest thing to collect. For example, the Mayrose Cardinals from 1960, which were only in the St. Louis area. There were literally the first year the Cardinals played in St. Louis. It was just a cool set to collect and see. And I always thought all those regional sets were very, very interesting. And again, Royal Castle is one of those sets I just saw at the National. I rarely, rarely, even some of the bigger regional shows I attended over 45 years, I wouldn't see, Royal Castle. And I really, really wouldn't see a lot of regional sets. I know at a few Nationals I saw them, and I kicked myself now not buying a type card of it. When I had an opportunity to, in Chicago, which there was a vendor there, a dealer there one time. I remember he had a bunch of them. I don't remember him having the greasy, but I knew he had some of the common cards.
Next up is this is running. I don't want to out this, but this is also running in Heritage right now.
Oh yeah,
This is your favorite card, yours and mine favorite card. It's a mouthful to say. The 2000 playoff contenders championship rookie ticket, Tom Brady, number 144. And this card, there's only 100 of them. So when they come up, it's kind of something special. And it is by far the most expensive football card. I mean, we haven't seen, we talked once about like what would be the most, hypothetically, what would be the most expensive football item. And I think right now a Nagurski nine coming up, the Nagurski nine coming up would, would be a $1 million card. But I mean, this card's currently at 280,000. I apologize if I'm outing this to anyone listening. You can, and I want to pay note to the certification number. So this is an 8.5, so it's good shape, and the autograph is a 10, even though his autograph, in my opinion, has always looked like crap. So here it is, $280,000. And what makes this very interesting is this sold in May of 2021 in Heritage, same auction, and I verified the cert numbers. This is the same card 5 years and 3 months later being sold. So somebody bought this for $1,590,000. That includes the buyer's premium of 20%. And 5 years later, they're flipping it. I get nervous. I get nervous buying lottery scratch-off tickets. And this guy's, trying to flip a $1.6 million card.
I honestly don't think it's, I could be wrong, but I don't think it's going to hit 1 million. That's my honest opinion.
I would agree. I think that look at this 2021. This is you're on the tail end of COVID. I mean, things took off. Basketball took off. When The Last Dance came out, Michael Jordan. This was huge. I mean, this is Brady getting ready to head to the Patriots, another Super Bowl. This was that Last Dance, with the Bulls and Michael Jordan really focused people on collecting. And I think this got swept up in the hype of it. Because I mean, so it's kind of, I don't know. I'd be very nervous, to be flipping that card, I guess is the best way to put it,
Well, I think it's a two-folded event because number one, a lot of the flippers are feeling the market is just going up, up and up. There's no stopping it. And then on the other hand, you got people saying we're at the bubble now, and the bubble's going to be harsh this time. But if you look back at the hobby, if you really understood the hobby, there have been so many bubbles since 1990. Right up to today, you have basically 35 years of bubbles, 35 years of up and down movement on
Totally.
cards. And the one thing that to me has always held its value are vintage football or vintage cards in general. And for the football hobby, it's vintage football and it's oddball football if the oddball football is understood and has been talked about and has been studied, and you have several collectors competing for it. Again, where are we in the hobby right now? Okay, we might be in a bubble. We might be there's a lot of new blood coming into the hobby, but is that new blood in the hobby going to, run to our table next week and say, "Do you have any 1986 Topps football?" Well, I do. Okay, what can I look at? Yeah, sure.
I've given my testimonial before, but I mean, I came into the hobby in 1999 buying Steve Largent cards and then moving towards what I collected. Oh, here's 1980, 78, 79, 80, 81, all the way up through like 86 is when I stopped. So I mean, I look at those cards and that's nostalgic to me. But then eventually, I get invited into, chat rooms and I start bumping elbows with people who are into vintage. I'm like, oh, that's a really good looking card. Oh, I know who, Y.A. Tittle is. Oh, I know who Don Hudson is, simply because Steve Largent broke his touchdown record. But, it and then you start going, oh, that's cool. I love the history of it. And I love my history. I mean, my avatar is James Madison. So I mean, I gravitated to those. I mean, and I think there are people like that out there who I mean, if they buy a modern card and they love it, and then they just start bumping elbows with people, and it starts with being present at a national. If you've got the wherewithal to go to a national, that means you're kind of committed. I mean, and then if you start talking to people about the hobby and you start migrating to that, I mean, it's just, it's two gravitational forces pulling each other together.
And again, when I got my early start in the hobby, I mean, I tried to read everything I could about,
Yeah.
and there wasn't that much information. There was Sports Collector's Digest. There was the Beckett book. The Beckett magazine wasn't even out at the time, so you only had a couple sources. So a lot of word of mouth. You go to a show, find a friendly dealer. The dealer would, talk about things, so on and so forth. And then I learned a lot over the years.
Yeah.
And
Well,
my,
now you are the source of knowledge.
well, I, to me, the pull for me was always a sense of completion in the run.
Yeah.
And at that time, back in the 80s, I was very focused on 1948 to 1988.
Totally.
Again, if I got that 1986 set out of the way, okay, I can now start working backwards
Yeah.
to whatever I needed type of thing, given that I had a bunch of, as we know, 1960 cards to build off of.
Yep.
And
Well, and now if you're, that completionist, portion is missing because now you're
right.
looking for that chase card, that one of one, that one of 10, that autographed, that, prism refractor black, diamond cut, thing. You're not after the set. You're agnostic to the set.
Right.
So.
And I find it fascinating to go on an eBay and just do a search for 2026 football sets. You get a lot of inserts and you get, finisher set type of
Oh
thing.
man, that cracks me up.
One card for a dollar plus a dollar shipping or whatever type of thing. I don't know. I don't.
Well, next up, I don't get excited about an auction very often, but Robert Edward Auctions, REA, friend of the program, Brian Dwyer has been on the show before. Longtime friend. I knew Brian when he worked at SGC. Just a fantastic human being, great guy, and I wish him luck. But this auction that hit is incredible. And this is probably one of the things that I saw on here. This is a 19, look at this, 19,
Sixty-one and 62 wax.
1961 and 60 wax packs box. BBCE certified. Steve Hart, obviously BBCE. He's been on the program before. But I've never seen a 61 tops wax
Right.
box.
Right.
The wax pack is difficult. And Kirk Robinson can attest 62 tops is incredibly difficult. I took these screenshots, I th think, a day and a half ago to prep up for the show. And so, I mean, who knows what the price is at now, but look at this. A wax pack of 62 tops is probably in the, $3,000 to $4,000 range. So this $72,000 is already at its,
Yeah.
winner's premium, is already at, it, the piece it together price. Just absolutely beautiful. Look at these two sitting next to each other. I don't know where he found these, but it's incredible. And
That
then,
is an amazing piece of football card history, in my
oh
opinion.
my gosh. And then follow that up with this. I mean, this is dang close to being right in your breadbasket here. The 64 Philly. If you're a longtime listener, 65 Philly is the captain's favorite set.
I remember both of those boxes well, believe me.
Yep. So 64 Philly and 68 tops. Just, oh my gosh, look at these. Just incredible. 24 packs. The box is in good shape too.
Those are beautiful.
So 64 Philly, about 2,000 a pack. So this has a ways to go. 68 tops, usually 1,500 to 2,000 a pack. So, I mean, both of these will end in the, $50,000 range likely. And then somebody sent me, hang on a second. This takes me a second to load. I can only load a couple picks at a time, but I wanted to, somebody sent me last night. Bob and I are both the same. We both have people on the ground who are constantly sending us, pictures. The National going on in full swing, as he mentioned. So somebody sent me this picture of the REA booth that has. So you can see the 62. There's the Philly, the 68. Just incredible.
It's interesting. I see an 88-89 Fleer basketball box, which I actually bought wholesale for $10.80. and sold them for 50 cents a pack. And I actually remember several shows back in probably early 1990 that dealers were trying to get rid of their excess
Oh my
inventory and
gosh.
went for $5. So.
Wow. That was half of it. Whoops, that picture didn't stick. Hang on a second. That was half of it. The other half is somebody sent me this picture. Whoops. Hang on a second. It's hard to look this good and bring pictures up. All right. This is the other half of the display booth, and you can see, there's the 61, just a little 86, FLIR NBA up there, and then some boxes of that. I forget the game where they hit the little white ball with the stick. 86 football peeking behind there. 76 football sitting back there, and then on the left of the other side, you saw some 72 tops. Three series, and I think they have this one advertised as the first series, in the auction. But just look at this. Look at this booth. This is just incredible. I would stand in front of this for a little while. I really would. It's pretty incredible. All right.
Nice, beautiful stuff. Beautiful.
Stop sharing. Hang on a second. Let me organize this. Also, REA has quite a few. I mentioned it. They've got. Boom, boom, boom. Just a second. Let me load these. And they have quite a few wax packs and cello packs that are in auction too, which here's their auction with the cello packs. There are 19 cello packs for sale right now, including this lot number one, this lot number
Oh, the pump
2152
packs.
here. That is a PSA 6 with Jim Brown on the back. Now, one of the really hard things about 58 is how off-center they get. I mean, just look at that Bill George, how left to right it is. And what I've heard from a lot of other wax and cello experts is if the top card's OC, that typically runs through because that means the entire sheet that they cut it off of was OC. But I don't know why these fun packs, I was going to ask you about these 81 Tops fun packs, open
Yeah,
bag.
there were like a promotion by Tops. A lot of people would give them out, well, not a lot, but some people gave them out for Halloween gifts,
Oh, no
Christmas
kidding.
gifts, things of that nature. It was just a way for them to rewrap a bunch of cards they had sitting around and get rid of them. And they marketed them that way. There was also the bootleg ones.
Yeah.
They were somehow repackaging, and I never got a good and clear view of how that was done over the years. So.
It got top billing over the 58 top cello, which is why it made me curious. I was like, this must be because to me, an auction house puts their auction items in order of importance and order of price. Would
Right.
you agree? So the fact that those fun bags came before 58 top
I
cello.
don't know why they would do that. That doesn't make
Okay. I was curious. I'm like, there's something about those I'm not picking up. Also in this auction, 258 tops nickel packs.
Right.
These are incredibly rare. I've got one that I bought. I think I brought this up on a show. Is graded authentic, and I reached out to Steve Hart. I'm like, that's kind of interesting, and I verified it with the PSA. With the pop report,
Right.
and I reached out to Steve Hart. I'm like, I've never seen an authentic pack, and he goes, I grade them. I simply tell PSA that they are good, and then
Yeah.
PSA assigns them a grade. So
Okay.
it's like the only thing I can think of is that somebody accidentally put, I don't want a grade, I just want to know if it's authentic. Somebody
Yeah.
mismarked the submission. But he's like, that was probably 12 years ago. Because he goes, I don't remember it. And I have a pretty good memory. So I thought that was interesting. So I have one of those I'm going to try and cross over. But here's two 58 Topps nickel packs that are incredibly a PSA 6 and a PSA 7. That's in very good shape. And then last but not, well, there's a couple other things. One of your favorites, there are literally
Oh, yeah, I saw those.
three Namath cards, a PSA 8, incredible, a PSA 7 that looks just as good as the 7, or as the 8, excuse me, and then a rookie card with an autograph. And that autograph isn't very nice. Is that his normal? I seem to remember his autograph being a little better. Oh, well, it's
It's
none of my.
interesting because people ask me who've actually seen my name as rookie, what do you think it would grade at? And I said at the most probably a 4 or 5. I can't see it really being.
Oh, you mean your Namath?
My name as rookie, because of it was used and the corners aren't that great. So, but I think it would probably pull a 4 or 5 type of thing. And then I would have to have the disclaimer from my collection on it. I would have to.
You would have to from the captain from the Swick collection. And then last but not least, National, or excuse me, REA is this. It'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the Nagurski. 15K and counting with 16 days to go for a PSA 1 Nagurski with tape over his face, with a crease over his our left hand, gently used corners, OC. I mean, there's got to be more to this because a one is not good. I didn't grab a screenshot of the back of it, but I mean it's there's got to be a little more to this. Some paper loss or something on the back that we're not seeing for it to be a PSA 1.
What am I?
It is. Even a Nagurski 1 is fetching 18,000 now.
And I'm sure that'll go for 40.
25.
No, probably more than that. Yeah, I
Yeah, you
mean,
think?
yeah, there's a lot of pressure on Nagurski right now. The one hobby regret I have is that not buying every chickle I saw. Seriously. Back in the 80s, back in the 90s. And I turned that what I had over on three separate occasions, the last being the infamous sale at the National in Chicago, whatever it was, 7, 8 years ago. And to this day, I always said to myself, I should have just put all those, buy as many as I could, put them in a box and forget about it, type of thing.
I have an article locked and loaded I need to write that compares the appreciation if you would have invested money in 84 Topps wax, football versus the stock market. Where would you be now? And then, that's it to amazing auction. I left for brevity's sake, I left a whole bunch of things off, but that REA auction that just opened is probably the first time in several years that I've been like, oh my goodness, this is Christmas come early at the old Squire's house. It's pretty amazing.
There's some amazing pieces that Brian Dwyer and his crew picked up there and are featuring in that art. That's a be that's those are some beautiful pieces of football history, to say the least.
I'll reach out to Brian, see if he'll come on the show. I mean, it's got 16 days left. National ends in a day. Basically, a week for him to wrap things up. Maybe 3 4 days before. Maybe we get him on as the auction's winding up. Give him the gridiron great bump.
We'll see what we can do. We'll
Well,
try to pull some.
speaking of moving on to the National, our fearless leader Jeff Payne posted this up on our vintage, on our VCP, which I thought was pretty cool. Just a nice panoramic of the Natty in full swing. You walk through the doors. We're both very familiar with the Chicago, or the whatever it is, the convention center. What is it? The Bob something something convention center. I forget. But yeah, pretty cool. I mean, we can smell the body odor. We can,
I can feel my feet getting
yeah.
throbbing from after the third hour of walking around.
Odds are somebody in that crowd has some marinara sauce spilled on their shirt. And then he sent this of a booth, a Pokemon booth.
Hey, there it is.
Hey,
Another.
that's obviously a rendering of what it would look like if Bob had his own Pokemon booth.
I could be the Pokemon of the year or whatever, dealer of the year type of thing. I
Sorry,
tell you.
pretty good with AI, but AI won't modify human beings' faces, so unless you pay a premium. So that's my Photoshop.
I appreciate it. My neighbor did an AI of me taking my head from our European vacation, and I'll send it to you privately. I mean, it's hysterical. I'm talking to a sardine in Paris with a glass of wine in front of me, type of thing.
Oh, man.
But I think the national, again, as I said earlier, for a young kid, it's exciting. You're going to get cards, you may get a autograph of somebody you like, all those pack breaks. If you're a Pokemon collector, you're in heaven because there's a ton of whatever it is. I still maintain there can be somehow a market where it's a vintage only collection, convention, show, so on and so forth. And I think if it was run properly, you would get the big name dealers in the country and the small dealers in the country who just still deal in vintage. And there's still a lot of dealers that just deal in vintage.
Well, it's tough because there's dealers who do vintage and modern. They recognize some of the money, the quick money might be in modern. So if you did like a vintage football only, card show,
Right.
you can't have anything on your table before 1989 or so.
I mean,
I don't know.
I look at what I'm bringing to the show next week, and I got a 5,000 count box of football cards, stars and commons, all brands, from roughly 1990 up to the few packs that I opened in the early 20s, and I'm going to blow them out. I mean, I figure, I'll start off at $1 a card, but if you want 50 cards, they're half a buck or whatever. I'll figure it out while I'm there. Vibe for it, and I'm hoping I can find a couple people like picking through cards, a box of cards, and see what they may have a favorite team, a favorite player, whatever the case may be, and get some cheap stuff for their collection and have a good time with them.
Well, one of my
I saw at last year's National, there was a guy, a dealer. He just had 5,000 count boxes everywhere on table,
jeez.
and he had chairs sitting. Every card was a dollar, and I think I forgot whatever his discount break was. It was 100 cards. You got them for whatever, $50. And I'm looking at some of the cards, and I'm saying, this card's worth a dollar now. I mean, I was just shocked by it. But literally, there were guys there, sitting and just keep chronically pulling cards out. I'm glad for the guy because he probably moved a lot of inventory, but I can almost guarantee he was putting that money right back in immediately to crack open more wax to get more cards out and keep replenishing the boxes.
Where to buy lunch?
Yeah, exactly. And I still remember one of the earliest card shops I went to locally back in Connecticut. He had what was called the 2 cent room. Believe it or not, he had probably 100 5,000 count wax monster boxes there, just filled with commons, non-sports, baseball, basketball, football, hockey, everywhere. And he had a bunch of folding chairs there and a couple of folding tables and pull them out. And I remember being I still remember to this day, I pulled out probably a couple hundred 1974 Topps football cards out of those boxes for 2 cents each. So I probably got like 200, 300 cards for whatever, $4 or $5 back then. I'm
Oh,
talking
man.
80s. And I had fun doing it. It was a good, I needed some of the cards. I figured I'd keep cards for trading, selling, so on, so forth. But he always used to tell me, the guy who owned the shop, that room pays my rent of the building, of his his space there. And he said, I got guys that spend all day Saturday there, and they buy $50, $60, $70 worth of cards.
Wow.
And he was a dealer that, he basically accumulated cards when you could buy a 5,000 count box for $5. Guys just got rid of their, inventory. They didn't want it, so on and so forth. So the, those days are gone right now. But at the same
Yeah.
time, it's an incentive to see at a show a big card box. You're the type of person who likes going through boxes. Yeah, go through it and have some fun with it.
I can't imagine. I know my station in this hobby, and I am the guy who buys the card from the guy who sits at that table, who then goes and gets a grade. There's been one national where I was like, I want, and I needed a 57 tops Zeke Bratkowski card, to complete my PSA 8 run, and very difficult. I think I wrote an article about the uncut sheet of 57 tops, and the pole positioning of Zeke Bratkowski is the number one spot on the sheet. And I just remember I walked down the aisles, and anybody who had 57 tops commons, I just started leafing through it. And I bought probably 20 Zekes and then submitted them all, and I got zero PSA. So, and then I learned my lesson. I also don't have an eye for grading. So
No, I get it. You get it.
There's one other thing I wanted to bring up about the National, and that's Sable cards. There's a wax dealer, if you could call it that. Every year sets up, his name's Sable. Every year sets up at the Natty or whatever big sports card big shows with all this ungraded, unopened, and it is renowned to be resealed garbage. I mean, you can look at some of the th look at this the Sports King right there, at about the 6 o'clock. I mean, and the 35 Chickle. You look at this and you salivate and you go, wow, what if there's a 48 Leaf in here somewhere, 57 tops, penny pack, but just that 35 Chickle. Can you imagine if this stuff was real? And he's kind of a not a very kind guy. If you're like, hey, can I take this and go over and get it graded? Hey, if I buy this for $5,000 and go get it graded and it comes back as failed, can I get my money back? Nope. All as is, all nothing.
And again, I don't understand, are you just looking for a showcase? You feel you have a museum type of thing. And don't you have a reputation in the hobby that somebody has numerous times bought stuff from you and it's come back unauthentic, resealed
Yes.
type of thing?
His reputation is set. I mean, this has become one of the places you swing by, like, hey, check out Sable's table. And I have a photo here from our fearless leader, Jeff Payne, that he posted up where he's like, hey, had to make an obligatory stop by Sable cards. 265 tops tall boys, 57 tops nickel, 56 top nickel, 62, all kinds of good stuff in here. And you looked at it and yeah, what if nothing like those, gosh, he has one where there's a 53 Bowman, I believe. There's a 58 tops nickel pack at, up there. Hang on a second. Let me find, Fearless Leader sent a photo over. I wanted to find that.
And 53 Bowman football, I have never, ever seen a pack.
53
And
Bowman.
I have never, that wrapper was very difficult to come by when I was collecting.
I have a 53 Bowman nickel pack in a GIA holder that I
Okay.
intend to get crossed over, and it looks good. It's the GAI, if it started with one or zero, was the Mike
Yeah.
Baker days, et cetera. So supposedly, it's better. This whoops. Sorry, this was from, I messed that up. Sorry. This is a photo Fearless Leader Jeff Payne sent over last night. As I mentioned, his obligatory stop by. You'll notice a lot of the same inventory. That's because nobody buys his garbage and he just keeps moving it from national. 52 52 Bowman Large, 55 tops, 65 tops, two tall boys, probably the same two tall boy packs we saw,
Yeah.
58, et cetera. But I mean, you just, again, you look at this and you're like, what is, there's 53 Bowman right there. I'm not, can you see my magnifying glass?
Yeah.
Oh, you can? Great. There's, I wasn't sure about that. Wasn't sure if that was for me. There's 53 Bowman, you know, what is
That
that,
is
55? That's 55 Bowman. Yep.
66 right next
Yep,
to
66. That is a incredibly hard pack to come across. Some of these vintage guys, I mean, what if, but just notorious resealer. Anyways, it's just, I thought I'd post it up. If somebody hasn't heard of that gentleman, and you come across that booth, just know.
So, somebody like that, I don't know how big his section is. So let's say he's got the smaller section, and I don't know what they're charging now, 2,500,
Yeah.
1,000, whatever it is. So you got that fee, you got all your other costs involved. So obviously you must have big enough pockets to spend 10K on a national to do what? $1,000 worth of business, $2,000 worth of business? I mean, I don't know. Is it an
Well,
ego boost?
and how many people come back? Because years ago, you mentioned the price to get a card graded at the National now. I remember when it used to be $100, $150 to, you know, get it turned around at the National, you know, hey, we'll have it in 2 days. And I can remember paying that a few times, or bringing cards that I wanted immediately graded. Now the price is almost too much, because if you took a 53 Bowman wax pack over there, and they're like, well, this is a 10, you know, $20,000 pack, it's going to cost you 2,000 for quicker. But they don't offer it. They, you know.
It's so, again, it's become kind of, for lack of a better term, ridiculous trying to get these things graded. And it's like a moving target with PSA. We're going to charge this, but we can't deliver. All right, we'll give you half of the money back, and you'll get
Yeah.
it in 5 months from now or whatever. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I don't know how any other business could stay in business with this
Oh,
market model. I
I
take my
couldn't
yeah.
agree more. You know, Steve Hart would be smart
You
to
know?
offer a you know, hey, I'm the guy that PSA brings the packs to. He'd be smart to have a quick peek assessment. You
Yeah.
know, hey, you know, for, you know, $100,
Yeah.
I will let you know, yes, no, or I would need to break it out of the holder, the GI holder.
Right.
I can't determine it. But
Right.
literally just a line somewhere over there, ring a bell for $100, throw a $100 bill down. I'll come over and I'll give you a minute of my time to
Yeah.
grab a pack and go,
Yes
yeah,
or
that
no?
looks good.
Yeah.
That looks good. I buy that. You know, that'd be a pretty good service. I mean, but I imagine he's busy at the National, but he's got a cavalcade of people there helping him. You
Yeah.
typically see Steve in the back, you know, looking at wax packs. I mean, just, you know, for the big buys and sells, he comes out. But I mean, yeah, anyways, I don't know. It'd be interesting. And, you know, now you're starting to get little, you know, competitors are shooting up, you know. What's the There's another guy who's a long time. I mean, Mike Cicerone could open his own, you
Yeah.
know, authenticating company. I mean, he knows quite a bit about it and his sequencing.
Yeah. And the old and I honestly I lost contact with Dave Richardson out of Arizona, the rapper king.
Dave Richards, thank you.
Yeah, he knew wax, and he knew the rappers, and he knew how they were sealed, so on. So I could never imagine his collection was just so incredible. And he said, I didn't do anything with cards, I just wanted the wrappers. And he said, I collected them for years and years and years, and I thought that was pretty cool. Same thing with people that just collected empty display boxes of all sports. They would go to a hobby shop, hey, you want that box, or do you want to sell it to me empty? And a lot of guys would just give them the boxes. And,
Here, take it. I
yeah.
was just about to break it down and throw it away. You know, I guess everybody's got their niche and hobby. I mean, I've found mine at uncut sheets. I love unopened, but it makes me nervous.
Yeah.
Before, uncut sheet is the only thing I can be 100% certain it has not been doctored.
Yeah. It's interesting on VFC. There's been a thread about the 1960 Fleer strips, football strips, and I mentioned years ago I bought. I was probably a dozen of them, but they're all 6-card panel and 5-card panels, and I
You had
probably.
those at a national once, didn't you?
I'm
I think
sorry.
you brought those to a national once.
Yeah, and I ended up selling them all, but my theory was always because it was 11 cards across. Whatever they did, they'd cut at the sixth card and had two strips there. And I'm just wondering, for whatever reason, they got thrown out or they, got out. And I can't see them being taken out of a printer at that time because nobody knew the value, but those really didn't have value. I always thought they were printer scrap. And then somebody got a hold of the sheet and then cut it across, although there were pretty good cuts there. So I always thought it was they were changing the blade in the cutter because everything was done by hand. There was no hydraulic cutting there, and there was no laser cutting like there is today. And they just worked their way in their hobby many, many years ago. And I still remember the show I was at in Naugatuck, Connecticut. A dealer friend I knew. He said, a guy came in the shop with these and I bought them from him. And then he showed me and I said, okay. And then we agreed on a price. It wasn't that much. He basically probably made a $20 bill on the thing. I said, these are pretty cool to look at. So I said, I know I can sell them down the road. And I ended up doing them. Yeah, I did have them at a couple of nationals. I remember. So interesting. And, some of it resurfaced. There's somebody on eBay that has a ton of them. And my theory was he must have bought some odd sheets or odd scrap pieces, and then he, lasered them type of thing, so on and so forth. Because I really haven't seen many, with the exception of 62 and 63 near mint Fleer cards, raw, when I was actively collecting them. I saw
Well,
some. I never.
60 Fleer fits on one sheet, 132 cards.
Yeah.
61 Fleer, they mix it up because I forget what it is, like 200 and something, because there's the NFL and the AFL.
Right. 263 set, I think. No, not 263.
That was
Two
like
219.
190, 200. I forget what it is.
Yeah.
So because it's not half NFL, half AFL, one sheet for each, I've probably got a dozen 61 Fleer sheets. All of them are the AFL sheets. I've never seen an NFL sheet. And the AFL sheets I have, I compare what row, how they start. So the rows, the horizontal rows you mentioned, how they, so they probably cut those in rows, not in columns. The rows are the same, but they're mixed how they appear on the sheet. So I mean, like I've got them labeled as like, I call it the pole position, the number one spot as you're looking at. It's like, okay, that starts with this guy. So I have three sheets that start with that guy and two sheets that start with this. And so when I look at a 61 Fleer sheet when it hits eBay or an auction, I'm always like, oh, our pole position card is this. I've already got that. Or very rarely do I come across a unique layout of the 61 Fleer sheet. So it's kind of a clue into how they printed
And
it.
in theory, with the way they cut it, it was easier for them to keep pushing
Sorry,
in
dogs.
the strips and keep cutting the strips and then cutting in each individual card. They wouldn't they, it would be much much more difficult to turn the sheet around and try to cut it across the long end than the 11 card end.
Totally agree. Yep. So,
So
yeah, Mike Taverner, who's a VFC member, but he was also on LTS. He used to be a printer's apprentice. He told me because we were really into the 48 leaf set together, and he's the one that kind of gave me insight into like, printers have a tremendous amount of pride, which I hadn't really thought about. He's like, which lets me know that the 48 leaf football was probably done by an apprentice because of all the printing errors. And same with, yeah, anyway, it's fascinating when you look at it from a professional point of view. I'm an electrician. I can walk in and immediately know if you did your own wiring or if a professional did it. It's, you can just tell by looking at it. So,
Yeah,
but
exactly.
yeah, well, we're missing our friends at the National. The picture of the pizza, the annual, get together at pizza. It's kind of cool to see, to look at it and live vicariously through it. But, it's been a
It
couple
is.
years since it's been 4 years since I've been to a National. I just,
Wow.
something keeps coming up. It's just, kids. I've got a 17-year-old and a 12-year-old kid, and next year Xander's
Hey, life
going off to college, and who
it's
knows?
just so I mean it is what it is, and that's it.
Yeah.
This is a hobby, at least to us it's a hobby. I mean, to
Yeah.
people,
Yeah.
other people's life and death, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
So I'm sure I'll be back to another national. I don't know when, and it'll be on my terms, put it that way. I'm not gonna
Yeah. Well, now that you're not in Wallingford, I mean, Chicago's not as how far of a drive was it to Chicago from
I
where
never
you?
to Chicago. I always flew out there because
Oh, gotcha.
it was just way too long. If
Yeah, that.
I drove straight through, it was probably way I drive, it would probably have been like 18, 20 hours.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And it's just not a comfortable ride. And as it is for Myrtle Beach, I'm going to be driving back and forth both days. That's a good, depending on traffic, either an hour to an hour and a half drive, which it is what that's not that bad. But
Gotcha.
I wouldn't want to drive out there. I know obviously I could take a lot more. The furthest I drove for the National was Baltimore, and I drove Atlantic City. Atlantic City was probably, because of the traffic, 4.5 hours to get there. So, but they actually had a pretty functional offloading. They had garage doors that were open, and you dropped your stuff there. They had a guard watching it. You went to park your vehicle,
Oh, that's nice.
and then you knew where your table was. That was
Oh, that is cool.
yeah. It
That's
was
organized.
the second one time I went there by air, and it was just a pain in the neck. I had UPS shipped a bunch of stuff. The
Yeah, totally.
stuff got sent to the National rather than the UPS store right there. I wanted everything shipped to the UPS store, and I would have picked it up there. And the guy, we had to try, we didn't know where the stuff was. So we had to track it down. And the guy finally tracked it down. And he said it wasn't supposed to be shipped there, supposed to be shipped to the store. So then,
Boy, that stuff's loose. Yeah, they have no idea. They have, imagine it gets busy there.
it was like a
So,
stone comedy there watching the thing.
boy.
Well, all right, we're pretty much out of time. If you're not subscribed to Gridiron Greats magazine, take
What?
$35 out. $35 out of your next grading and send it to us, and we will send you the magazine.
Send in one last Steve Largent card and subscribe to Gridiron.
Unbelievable. Anyway, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll be back hopefully next week with a few more podcasts. We'll see you then. Take care.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history. But as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.